Hello, I'm Keith Powell, and welcome to the best of Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio International. Now, before we get into the archives, we're going to discuss something, actually, for a moment. Now, you may remember the whole news story, and it's actually kind of still going on, about the attack of two Russian citizens who are now living in the UK that were, well, being poisoned. Of course, they did survive. The two suspects claimed that they were in Salisbury to visit a cathedral. They happened to be from Russia, by the way, the same place that the two victims were also from. Now, of course, this raised eyebrows. Is it the FSB, which is used to be called the KGB, and how much did Putin know about it? Well, as soon as these two tourists, and I'm using quotations here, tourists, visited Salisbury, they promptly left Salisbury and went back to Russia. And of course, this is when all the speculation came out. Well, who are these people? First, they said they were tourists. But then, well, an organization, a founder of an organization, Elliot Higgins, who started something called Bellingcat, did a lot of research. They discovered that these actually were agents in the FSB. They had various aliases, as well as some others that we can talk about probably on another program. Now, digital detectives, as they're known, because the thing is, in the digital world, there is going to be a footprint, pretty much like we used to say at one time, the paper trail. Just follow the paper trail and where it leads. If you have a smoking gun on one piece of paper, just keep following it backward and you will find the bullet. Now, digital detectives basically do the same thing. Linton Besser now takes a look at the London-based internet researchers who have all of a sudden had a profound impact on public knowledge, Bellingcat. And they've worked to rock and shake things up in London, Moscow, and Washington.
With its 5 kilometres of passageways and more than 1,000 chambers is committee room number 9. It's easy to miss among the oak panelling and the tapestries and the white-gloved clerks of the Parliament. I journeyed down into that hoary labyrinth last week to get a glimpse not of the past, but of the future.
It is remarkable, and it's due to two big trends that are shaping the world of politics and conflict.
Bob Seeley, a Conservative politician, is also a member of the Parliament's Foreign Affairs Committee.
Firstly, the explosion in digital technology, the fact that everyone now has an iPhone, which can do so many things. And secondly, the growth of democratic and not online activism, which the Syrian war, the Ukrainian war, the Skripal case, it's given a target for all these online activists to focus on, to dig for the truth.
In committee room number 9 that day, Bob Seeley was the opening act for a dramatic show of the power of the internet. The main event was the latest pronouncement by a group of online researchers calling itself Bellingcat.
You know, the last 10 years we've seen a massive increase in the amount of information available online, and that has enabled people, such as the team at Bellingcat, to do open source investigations and make all kinds of findings.
Elliot Higgins is not a trained journalist. In his last job, he was reviewing orders at a firm which manufactured women's lingerie, but he is an inveterate internet researcher. He monitored hundreds of YouTube channels to become a critical source of information on the war in Syria, helping to publicise shadowy arms trafficking and the deployment of cluster bombs. He launched Bellingcat in 2014 and attracted a group of like-minded obsessives.
In this specific investigation, we used a combination of open source information and also information we received from sources in Russia. But we used open source information to actually verify this. So there's various, some of it could be online databases, leaked information that's been online for a long time.
This time, Bellingcat took one of the world's most secretive organisations, the Russian Military Intelligence Unit, known as the GRU, and thrust its agents onto the front pages of almost every metropolitan newspaper in the world. In September, London's Metropolitan Police released the photographs and cover names of a team of GRU agents alleged to have been behind the botched assassination on former Russian spy Sergei Skripal using a military-grade nerve agent known as Novichok. Bellingcat took the information and set to work online. They quickly identified one of the men as Anatoly Chapiga, a high-ranking colonel, and the second as a military doctor named Alexander Mishkin.
So last night we revealed the identity of the Dr. Mishkin, a former colonel in the GRU. We're now revealing more information about him. We know his hometown. Our partners in Russia, The Insider, has actually visited his hometown and spoke to local people who not only told us that our identification was correct, but he also received the Hero of Russia Award, the highest honour you can receive in Russia.
The team guessed the spy might have continued to use his real first name and his place of residence, so they kept plugging that information into publicly available databases. They got a hit on a similar name and identical date of birth, which they then matched to the ownership records of a Volvo. The car was the breakthrough, because it was registered at none other than the street address of the GRU headquarters. Apparently, it offers spies a way to get off their speeding tickets. They knew they had him, but Bellingcat wanted a photograph to prove it. And for this, they turned to traditional investigative reporting. This is Christo Grozev, one of Bellingcat's lead researchers.
We contacted people who would know these people, who would have access to their personal documents, and we tried to convince them to share them with us. And that was the thing that made it possible for us to disclose this to the public.
The importance of the announcement was obvious. The already questionable denials from Moscow now looked ridiculous.
What we've proven, and that was the only thing that we set ourselves for ourselves as a goal, to prove that these are the people that Russia lied were not the people. And we've proven that convincingly.
Bob Seeley sounded a word of warning, however. The world should not rush to laugh at the GRU, but instead be wary of its reach.
It's very embarrassing, but one shouldn't just judge the GRU by their failures, because they have had many successes as well. I think the last couple of operations have failed, but maybe that's due to overstretch or over-ambition on their part. But they have mounted successful operations elsewhere and continue to do so to this day.
And that report came to us from Linton Besser in London. And you are, of course, listening to Media Network Plus, or the best of Media Network Plus, from PCJ Radio International. We now go into the archives. Yes, into the archives with a program on a very special radio station located in Montreal, Canada.
This is Media Network Plus.
CKUT in Montreal is one of the most vibrant campus community radio stations in Canada. The station will soon be celebrating its 25th anniversary on FM, because the history of the station actually goes back even further. CKUT Radio McGill gets 40% of its funds from students at McGill University. But this could be in jeopardy, as students from McGill will be voting in a referendum on whether or not to continue to have a tiny portion of their student fees go towards the station. Louise Burns from CKUT tells me how having 40% of funds reduced would have an impact.
If you can imagine losing 40% of any budget, it's a huge blow if you don't have it. In addition, if this referendum, which is in a referendum asking the question to undergraduate McGill students whether they want the continued existence of the station, by virtue of paying a fee, each student pays a full-time SSMU or undergraduate student pays $4 a semester. If we lose that, then the administration is not obliged to sign any agreement with us, which is necessary to exist. Our license, we are no longer tied to a campus, so our license would be in question, as well as the place that the studio is located at is a McGill building, so that is also a big problem.
Now, the referendum, of course, is coming up. Is there a sense amongst the volunteers and also the paid staff, you know, if this doesn't go the way we hope it does, what do we do?
We have been thinking about that plan B for many years. Soon as the kind of nature of our arrangement with the university changed, and it changed by the fact that they insisted on a lot more means by which students can reaffirm the existence of the station. And so being in a constant sort of state of having to defend our existence, you obviously start thinking very seriously about the plan B. To the extent that we had met with the CRTC and have sort of discussed things with other organizations in terms of what we would do, we feel really strongly that we want to stay as a campus community radio station. We really think it's a very complementary relationship in terms of the educational experience, that education is beyond the classroom, and that we have a lot of students who are interning and who are really making a really valid and, you know, a complement to their education, where they're doing internships for independent study, for academic credit here. And that education is just priceless. And so I really think it's important that we have that educational component, that we have the security of the student fees, so that we're not reinventing ourselves to be like, you know, either more commercial, having to, you know, start doing things to increase our popularity, which sometimes doesn't always work well with increasing the quality. Sometimes the drive for popularity actually makes the sound of the station not as interesting, not as grassroots, a little bit more phony, actually.
Now, with this referendum coming up, because there have been past referendums, is this something that happens on a regular basis?
Currently, it's happening every 5 years. Why I say that we're in a position of defending ourselves is that in 2007, the administration imposed a system whereby students can opt out of paying their student fees online. And so we have been battling that quite a bit, because that has been a slow bleed on our finances by virtue of the convenience. And what we are arguing is that it is not informed consent, that our fees are no longer being considered as $4, but rather as the total of all the fees that someone could opt out of. So we're not arguing for $4, we're arguing for $34 or along that line.
Hi, this is Professor Sandy Perlman of the Schulich School of Music, producer of The Clash and the Blue Oyster Cult, and let's not forget The Awesome Dictators. I am the person portrayed by Christopher Walken in the Saturday Night Live Cowbell skit. And you are listening to 90.3 CKUT Montreal.
I was speaking there with Louise Burns from CKUT. On an upcoming edition of the program, we will have a more in-depth look at CKUT.
Sharing the gospel through sermon and song, this is Family Radio.
Since 1994, doomsday prophet Harold Camping has been predicting the end of the world. The most recent two, well, let's go back to May, right? May 21st, he said the world was going to end. Nothing happened. Then a few days later, he surfaced, said, well, he miscalculated. Sounds like his calculator needs batteries. And he said it was going to be October 21st. Well, we're still here. As we heard at the beginning of the show, Harold Camping is retiring from Family Radio. But I was curious, along with a lot of other people, to find out what Family Radio thinks about all of this. So
I decided to call them up. I called up, asked to speak to someone in the public relations department. They said, well, send an email and we'll get back to you. Nobody did. Called back the next day, and they said, well, we can speak to you, but we don't want to have our name on the air. I said, fair enough, I understand. As we were doing the interview, something strange happened. I have to say, it is probably the strangest interview I've ever conducted in my whole life. So here is the full, unedited version of how that 4 minutes and 56 seconds actually played out. Mr. Harold Camping was calling for the end of the world on October 21st.
I'm not in a position to answer anything like that, October 21st or May 21st. Only we have no further comment.
And any particular reason?
If you have any more questions, sir, you can just write to Family Radio.
Well, I've written, and I haven't received a response yet.
Oh, you did write?
Yes.
To us already? Oh, okay. Did you address it to whom, sir?
I sent it to the following email. Actually, I sent it to the three ones: familyradio@familyradio.org, info@familyradio.org. and international@familyradio.org, because I'm just curious about something, because the end of the world was predicted as being October 21st, but yet Family Radio last week put out their new B11 shortwave schedule a week before it. So if the end of the world is coming, why would Family Radio put out that schedule?
That question. Give me just a moment, please. Hello, how may I help you?
I tune to Family Radio a number of times via shortwave from your relay exchange that you have with Radio Taiwan International.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just curious about something, because Mr. Harold Camping called for the end of the world October 21st, but yet a week before, or rather even 2 weeks before, Family Radio put out their new B11 schedule for the next 6 months. Why?
We're still here, as you can see.
Yeah, but if the end of the world was coming, why would you have put that schedule out?
Well, sir, we're still here, and life is going on until he actually comes, okay?
Uh-huh.
I don't have any other statement.
But my question is still, why would the schedule be put out 2 weeks before for the next 6 months?
I don't have answer to your question, sir.
You don't?
Right.
Well, one final question. Is a prediction like this going to be made again in the future?
I don't have a answer to your question, sir.
You don't have an answer? Is there somebody at Family Radio that does have an answer?
No, sir, we don't.
Really? And what about for all the people that donated money to Family Radio?
Well, we can deal with them directly, okay?
But will money be returned to them?
Sir, we will deal with them directly.
But will money be returned to them?
As they contact us, we will deal with them directly.
But that's not my question. My question is not will you deal with them, is will money that, let's say, was donated to Family Radio be returned to these people?
We will deal with them directly, sir.
But that's not the question that I was asking.
But that's my answer, sir.
Is that because you're not in a position to answer this?
I don't have any comments. I don't have any answer to you, okay?
Well, can you transfer me to somebody who does know?
We don't have anyone here.
Not even from the public relations department?
Oh, yes. We don't have public relations available for them.
Is there somebody in the program distribution department?
No, sir. We don't have anyone at all.
Nobody?
Yes.
So that means if I was to show up at your address in Oakland, California, at this very moment, there would be nobody there.
I'm saying we don't have anyone on the phone to talk to you regarding this subject.
Right, but I'm not asking about that now. I'm asking about the frequency department.
Sir, I think I answered your question. We don't have anyone at this moment to talk to you. We don't have
any of those departments you were asking for to talk to you, okay? This is just material line, and that's the only line which is open at this time, okay?
Well, do you have the phone number to the main office?
This is main office.
Right, so you're saying that there's nobody there?
Sir, I'm saying nobody here to answer your question.
Okay, but let's say I had a different topic. Let's say I was interested.
It's the end of the world as we know it. I feel fine. That's great. It starts with an earthquake, birds, snakes, and aeroplanes. Yeah, Lenny Bruce is not afraid. I have a hurricane. Listen to yourself. Turn worlds into its own means. Dummy, save your own needs. Speed it up and not speed. Got no speed. The ladder starts to clatter with the fear of fight down. High fire in a fire. Represent the southern gang. The government for hire in a combat site. Unless there was some coming in a hurry with the fury beating down your neck. Team reporters grab the drum, hit the ground, look at that low plane, find that uphill, overflow, population corner, good, but it'll lose, every seven worlds in your own need, listen to your heartbeat, tell me that the reds are in the reds with the right, you patriotic, slam fight, right, I'm feeling pretty psyched, it's the end of the world as we know it, it's the end of the world as we know it, it's the end of the world as we know it, I feel fine. Special Marine, turn, listen to yourself, turn a lock of mini uniform, I'm on the front of about 11, every motive estimated, not a motive, it's in your record, not a motive, not a kettle, step down, step down, what you feel, crush, up all this speed, no fear, cavalier, renegade, steer clear, turn a minute, of life, you offer me solutions, and offer me alternative, and I decline, it's the end of the world as we know it, it's the end of the world as we know it, it's the end of the world as we know it, I feel fine. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. I feel fine. The other night I took the fine cotter nano, took the fine mouth fan, in a live lantern, first hand lantern, president, plenty of Mr. Beck, birthday party, cheesecake, a jelly bean, boo, patriotic, slam, plus next and right. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. I feel fine. Oh, it's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. I feel
one of the biggest stories actually taking place, especially over the last 2 weeks, has to do with Jamal Khashoggi. Now, he was a Saudi journalist who was writing for the Washington Post in the United States, but then walked into the Saudi consulate in Istanbul and never walked out again. Of course, it became clear that he had been murdered inside the consulate. Now, Turkish officials are insisting that tapes exist of the final moments of his life. That's according to reports. The Saudi Arabian journalist was brutally murdered and dismembered inside the Saudi Arabian consulate. Up next, Patricia Carvalho speaks to Anthony Bubalo. He was a former diplomat to Saudi Arabia and is now a non-resident fellow at the News Group.
We don't know. At the moment, all the details that are coming out of Turkish government sources have all been leaked. There's nothing that's been released officially. And we've seen a steady stream of these leaks since Khashoggi's disappearance when he went into the Saudi consulate.
Turkish authorities are investigating a suspected plot to kill him. Donald Trump expressed a little scepticism about whether evidence exists. Here he is speaking to the media.
We've asked for it, if it exists. I'm not sure yet that it exists. Probably does, possibly does. I'll have a full report on that from Mike when he comes back.
And he's been criticised for trying to provide cover for Saudi Arabia. What role does that alliance between the US and Saudi Arabia play in this story?
So Saudi Arabia, of course, has been a key ally of the United States for decades. They have a very strong relationship built around energy, built around economic and military ties, and built around kind of common strategic interests in the Middle East. President Trump has has also kind of doubled down on that relationship. The administration has a strong personal connection with Mohammed bin Salman, the crown prince and the kind of power behind the throne. They've kind of placed an enormous bet on Mohammed bin Salman and have a lot invested in him as the kind of new generation ruler of the kingdom.
From what you know of Saudi Arabia, and you know, you've spent time there, you know this place quite well, yep. How likely do you think these allegations are in terms of the practices of the regime and how it works?
So in some respects, that they would kill a dissident in this manner is reasonably uncommon, but it is kind of consistent with the way that the crown prince has centralised power and made it very clear that he won't tolerate any dissent. We've already seen, previous to this, Saudi dissidents, Saudi critics, who have been abducted and extradited, rendered home from other countries in the Gulf. So it fits a pattern of Mohammed bin Salman's activities, but it's a kind of a level of brutality and capriciousness that even by those standards, I think many Saudis will find quite shocking.
How should the Western world respond to this? Do you think there should be sanctions against Saudi Arabia?
I think that if the evidence becomes overwhelmingly clear that the Saudi state authorities were behind the killing of Khashoggi, and it certainly seems that way from the evidence we've seen so far, and I think the international community has to make it clear to the Saudi state this is not acceptable. I think part of the problem with, and this is not the only kind of example of Mohammed bin Salman's reckless and brutal policies. There is also a long-running war that he has conducted in Yemen that is a disaster, not least for the Yemeni people. And a lot of these activities, I think he's pursued because there hasn't been any pushback from the international community and most importantly from the US. I mean, you have to ask yourself, why would the Saudis kill a dissident in the consulate? Given the likelihood to be tied back to them. And I think if it does prove to be true that they did it because they felt that they could get away with it.
There are some conflicting narratives around whether Khashoggi was killed accidentally during an interrogation gone wrong or whether there was a deliberate and very active plot to kill him. How likely are we to ever find an answer to this, a real answer to this? Is this story ever going to end?
You know, we don't know what the truth is. It's possible that it was a botched attempt to abduct and return him to Saudi Arabia. Although, given the information that has been leaked about the composition of the Saudi team, the fact that there was a forensic doctor on the team would suggest that the intention was to kill him rather than to abduct him. Nevertheless, we may never know. And what it really comes down to, again, is whether some of the information that is being leaked, whether these tapes do eventually surface and the Turks do actually play these tapes to other people, to US officials, or if they release them publicly.
A final opinion piece written by Khashoggi was published in the Washington Post today. The essay discusses the need for freedom of expression in the Arab world. How far away is the Arab world from attaining that sort of freedom?
I think the Arab world is very far away from that situation. Khashoggi makes reference in that article to how few Arab countries are judged to have a truly free press. And in fact, if anything, in recent years, the environment for the media in the Arab world has become considerably less free as autocrats across the region have cracked down hard on journalists in the aftermath of the Arab uprising.
And that's all we have time for on this edition of Media Network Plus, or the best of Media Network Plus. If you wish to contact us to let us know what you think of the program, our email address is pcjmedia@gmail.com. That's pcjmedia@gmail.com. 73 and 88 to the ladies.